but I don't leave. I wait. And I can't talk, but I tap lightly on Alicia's cane, and she stiffens, then smiles slightly and motions with her head and eyebrows, urging me to get going. But I wait anyway. About 2 minutes pass, and a young man wearing chinos and a blue dress shirt with a loud tie comes out of a corridor and walks right over to Alicia. Miss Van Dorn? Alicia turns and smiles. Yes? Hi, I'm John Freeman. I'm with personnel, and I'd be happy to try to answer your questions. Let's head this way. Would you like to take my arm? He turns and offers his left arm, elbow crooked just right. He's helped blind people before, and he looks like a nice enough guy. Alicia says thanks, lifts the end of her cane off the floor, and takes hold of his elbow, and they're off. And now I've got 1 hour and 10 minutes to find the names of some unhappy customers. Chapter 21 Findings. Newsflash. Invisible people make excellent spies and thieves. Finding exactly what I want at the legal department is ridiculously easy. Access through the security doors? A snap. I wait for a slow-moving person of considerable size and slide through the doorway right behind his behind. Finding the right information? A cinch. I've got a name to work with. Amber Carson is the woman who stonewalled Alicia on the phone about 2.5 hours ago. I find her office on the 4th floor, which is the only hard part, and then I wait patiently in an empty cubicle until she goes to lunch at 12:25. Ms. Carson apparently trusts all her coworkers because she doesn't log off of her computer, which is good because it saves me the trouble of finding Alicia and telling her that this is going to take a lot longer, which it would have, because I'd have had to wait until Amber Carson got back from lunch. Then I'd have had to look over her shoulder to learn her password and then wait for her to leave her office again so I could use her computer. I don't know if I could ever be a good lawyer. Lawyers are organized. The folks at Sears keep their files in such good order that I bet I could start from nothing and find whatever I needed in 15 minutes or less. But I don't even have to do an actual search. That's because I've got inside information. I happen to know that Amber Carson accessed the very file I'm looking for earlier today when Alicia called her. So all I have to do is use the recent documents utility on her computer. Point, click, and there it is. Which is kind of a shame. I went to a lot of trouble to memorize the model number of the blanket, all 10 characters, and now I don't even need to use it. The database notes show the entire history of my doomed electric blanket. Turns out 9,308 blankets were sold before it was discovered that some percentage of the controller units had been manufactured with faulty resistors. As of today, 379 consumers have complained, and of those, 163 have accepted a new blanket. When the problem was first noticed, the legal counsel had advised that there should be no product recall, but rather customer service should go with a replace as requested plan. Only one customer had complained that he believed the blanket made his heart pacemaker malfunction, but there was no injury and no lawsuit. Still, to be on the safe side, the legal staff set the policy that any complaining customer with a pacemaker should be advised to discontinue use of the blanket and return it immediately for refund, credit, or exchange. I'm glad I know enough about computers, because all I really want from the file is a list of 379 people who complained about the blanket. And with a couple simple sort functions, I've got their names and addresses and phone numbers isolated in a list. Printing out the list would make a big stack of paper, unless you know how to format, which I do. And it turns out that Amber Carson is an important enough person in the Sears legal department to have her own little laser printer on a work table by a window that looks out over the rolling lawn. So I put the whole list into 7-point type, single-space it, formatted into 6 columns, and print it out. I end up with just 3 pages, very small type, but readable. I fold the stack of pages inward from the top to bottom 3 times, and then fold the result in half lengthwise 2 times more. What I end up with is a wad of paper about an inch wide and 2 inches long, the perfect size to stick up into my left armpit. Gross and uncomfortable, but effective. As long as I keep my left arm clamped against my side, the paper is completely hidden. By 12:47, I'm on my way to hunt for Alicia. I could just go to the main entrance and wait for her, because that was our plan. But what's the fun of that? I'd rather track her down. I glide through 3 different doors, then down 1 stairwell along 1 corridor, through 1 last door, and then I'm outside. It's a lot more spring-like in Hoffman Estates than it was in Hyde Park. People are all over the place, eating lunch, resting, talking with friends. They look like creatures who have crawled out of burrows to soak up some sunlight. Except for the smokers. There's a little group of them outside almost every doorway, standing around, looking sort of defensive. They're not outside for the fresh air. I hold my breath when I go past so I don't have to smell the stuff. The map at the reception area said the personnel offices are in a building that's close to the main entrance. Again, I wait for someone to help me through the security doors. Once inside, I'm lost. I'm on the ground floor, and it's an area about the size of 3 football fields. There are partitions and corridors, nice offices around the perimeter, paintings and posters everywhere, bright and cheery, but it's still like a maze. This is an employees-only area, so there are no signs, no helpful maps or diagrams, except for the occasional emergency evacuation poster. So I just wander. My shoulder is aching and my arm is starting to go to sleep from the pressure of the clump of paper in my armpit. I'm almost ready to give up and head for our rendezvous spot. Then I hear Alicia's laugh, complete with that little snort at the end. I follow the sound to a glass-walled conference room where she's sitting with a bottle of Snapple and a thick blue folder on the table in front of her. Alicia's smiling and nodding, moving her head to follow the voices of the people at the table. She looks like she could have just graduated from college, with honors, and 3 proposals of marriage. Apparently, the guy who picked her up from reception is the big joker, because as I approach, he says something I can't quite hear, and Alicia and the 2 other people in the room start cackling again. Also at the table is a man who looks as old as my dad, but with a wrinkly face and a gray mustache and not much hair on top. He's wearing incredibly thick glasses. The 4th person is a woman who's maybe 30, maybe younger. She's got short blonde hair and big earrings, and she's wearing a soft gray pants and jacket outfit with a pink shirt. A nice enough face, a good smile, but squinting. Then I see this lady's like Alicia. She's got a white cane on the floor by her chair. The meeting's just breaking up, and I'm outside looking in. I get too close to the glass, and my breath fogs it up, so I move back a little. I watch Alicia. She shakes hands, first with the older man and then the woman. The smiles and hand clasps are so strong, so real and warm. And it's like this wave sweeps over me, and my eyes get blurry and I swallow hard. Alicia takes the arm of the younger man, and I turn and walk away fast. I don't want her to know I saw any of this. I don't want her to feel like I've been spying on her. I know she came on this trip to help me out. But this meeting she just had, these people she's met and talked to and laughed with, this is something she's done on her own. It's part of her life, not mine. It's got nothing to do with me. I'm in the reception area when Alicia and her guide appear, and I keep well away. Another warm handshake, then he's gone, and the woman at the desk says, "Alicia, I noticed you arrived by cab earlier. Would you like me to call one for you?" Alicia hesitates, so I hurry over and gently tap on her cane. She's startled but doesn't show it, and then says to the lady, "Yes, that'd be great. And be sure the driver knows this is for a ride to Hyde Park in Chicago. Some drivers don't want to go that far, and thank you." "Certainly. We get good service from the local cab company. They'll take you wherever you need to go. There's a bench to the left outside the front entrance if you'd like to wait outdoors. Otherwise, I can show you to a seat inside the doorway." Alicia smiles again, says thanks, and heads for the doorway. Thinking I'll be helpful, I take hold of her cane out in front of her hand. She stops and shakes her head sharply. I pull my hand away and then follow her outside. I wait until she's found the bench and sits down. No one's near, so I say, "I got in, and I printed out a long list of names. Can I put it in your backpack?" Alicia nods, swings the pack off her back, and unzips the main compartment, holding it open. There in the bag, I can see the thick blue folder that she had in the conference room. I glance around, take the list from under my arm, and drop it in. Alicia feels it hit the backpack, so she pulls the zipper closed, swings the bag behind her, and loops the straps back over her shoulders. She whispers, "So, you got something?" And I whisper back, "Yeah." The cab that arrives has no divider between the front and back seat, so I can't talk to Alicia. There's nothing to do but settle back in the seat and look out the window. The outer highways aren't too crowded, but when we get closer to O'Hare, everything bogs down. The cab is crawling through afternoon traffic. I'm 3 feet away from two other people, and I can't talk to either of them. I've never felt this alone. And the worst part is that Alicia seems perfectly content not to talk. She seems glad that she doesn't even have to try. The driver looks up into his mirror and says, "My sister? She works at Sears out in Rockford. Good company, you know. Good benefits." Alicia nods and smiles, then turns her face toward the window. The cabbie makes a few other attempts to get a conversation going, but Alicia just nods or murmurs a little. So the guy gives up and punches up a country station on the radio. It's a slow ride home. It's almost 3, and right on schedule the cab arrives at my house. I've got the list of names stuffed back under my arm. The driver puts the car into park and says, "That'll be $58, miss." Alicia pushes her door open and I scramble out. Then I lean back inside and I whisper, "Call you later, and thanks." Alicia nods slightly to me, then faces the cabbie and says, "I'm sorry. I just remembered an errand I have to run. Could you drop me at the big library on 56th Street between University and Ellis?" Because that was our plan. The driver shrugs and puts the car back in gear. "It's your money." Alicia closes her door and the cab pulls away. I watch her go. There's a gust of wind from the east and I shiver. I turn to go inside, and I feel like something has ended, or maybe begun, or maybe both. Chapter 22, Calls 59 and 60. After I'm home, and after I get Mom off my case for being gone so long, and after I get my door locked and put on some clothes, I unfold the list and flatten it out. I stare at the names and I think about how I got them, and I'm not proud of myself for being a sneak thief, but it had to be done, because something had to be done. Can't just sit around and do nothing. And I think about Alicia. I feel like I should call to make sure she got home okay, but she'd probably just get all hissy about how she can take care of herself. So I root around in my desk until I find a clipboard and put the list on it. Then I pull the cell phone loose from the charger wire, flop down on my bed, and go to work. My first 58 phone calls to the people on the blanket list break down like this. 13 phone service messages that say stuff like, "This number is no longer in service." 8 answering machines that I don't leave messages on. 6 husbands who don't know their wives had done any such thing as exchange an electric blanket and who couldn't care less. 5 wives who don't know their husbands had exchanged an electric blanket and who also couldn't care less. 6 lonely old people who remember something about a bad electric blanket, but who really just want to talk to me about their grandchildren or Wheel of Fortune or the weather or the cost of heating oil or anything at all. 8 people who hang up because they think I'm trying to sell something. 6 kids who don't know when Mom or Dad will be home or who say Mom and Dad can't or doesn't want to come to the phone and could I call back later. And 6 people, 2 men and 4 women, who were actually pleasant and cooperative, but had no strange blanket events to tell me about. 58 phone calls. and not one hint about anything unusual that might have happened because an electric blanket had stopped working properly. Mom has gotten over being mad about me going out today without telling her anything. Dad has come home from the lab for dinner, but he doesn't smile about anything. I can tell he's still churning the data. And for 2.5 hours before dinner and 2.5 hours after dinner, I'm in my room going through the names from my crumpled, stolen list. I'm lying on my bed, microwaves burning up my brain, running up a killer phone bill. So it's about 10:15, and I make the 59th call. I know it's kind of late, but I skip ahead 2 names to a person who lives in Denver because it's an hour earlier there. Mr. Borden?
Yes?
Sorry to bother you at home, but I'm doing a survey about your experience with a Sears electric blanket.
A blanket?
Yes, from Sears. Do you recall exchanging the blanket?
Yeah, we had a pink one. It was probably my wife did it, but it wasn't really our blanket. It was just left here.
Left there? You mean at your home?
The man doesn't answer at once. His voice is strained. My daughter, Sheila, that was her blanket.
May I please talk with her then?
No, she's gone now.
I hear the catch in his voice, in that certain way he uses the word gone. I don't know what to say. Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Borden. I hope you don't mind me asking, but this is pretty important. Do you think your daughter's death had anything to do with the electric blanket?
Death?
He says. There's anger in his voice.
She's not dead.
That's the hell of it.
She's just gone.
Over 3 years now.
I feel the hair on my arm stand up. Invisible goosebumps.
Gone? You mean like, how? Like run away from home? Something like that?
The man blows his nose, clears his throat.
Don't really know.
She dropped out of college, moved back home, gets a job. Then she takes up with some of her old friends, starts staying out late. Came home drunk most nights. Sleeps next day till noon, gets up, goes to her job at the restaurant, and on like that for about 2 months. Then one night she comes in late, goes to bed, and the next morning, gone.
And you haven't heard from her since?
Only once. She called, asked could we send her $2,000, $2,000 more than the 4 she already stole when she left. Send it Western Union, she says, to this grocery store in Florida. So I did it. Probably stupid. But if you have kids, you know why I had to do it. That's about 2 years ago. Since then, nothing. Except a note last Christmas. And it's not like it was even a card or something nice for her mother. Just one of those computer messages.
My heart almost stops. You mean an email?
I guess so. It's just plain letters on a piece of typing paper. Send it to Mrs. Harlan's house next door. Then her boy made a copy on his computer and brought it over to us.
Mr. Borden, it's really important that I talk to your daughter. Do you still have that message your neighbor brought to you?
You kidding? My wife keeps everything. Pictures, bits of hair, baby shoes, first tooth, report cards, everything. Tore her up when Sheila left.
Could you find that paper for me?
You mean right now?
Please. If it's not too much trouble, it might be a big help.
Hang on. I've got to walk upstairs.
I'm on my feet now, pacing. I go over to my desk and open up a little notebook. My hands are so sweaty, it's hard to hold the ballpoint. He's taking a long time. There's a click on the line as Mr. Borden picks up another extension.
You still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Here's what it says. Dear Mom and Dad, I just wanted to say Merry Christmas. I know I left so suddenly, but I think it was the best thing for all of us. Sorry if it hurts you. I think about you a lot. And I hope I can come home to see you again. Love, Sheila.
I don't want to hear all this, but once he's started, I can't interrupt. His voice is thick at the end, and when he stops, I say, Mr. Borden, at the top of the page, is there something that has the at symbol in it? A little A inside a circle? It might even say from, and then have a bunch of letters or numbers? I'm holding my breath.
Yeah, up at the top, it says from, and then there's something like that.
Can you please spell it out for me, just exactly the way it's written?
It's not written, it's all typed.
That's what I mean, just the way it's typed.
It says E-I-L-A-S-H, then that at doohickey, then it says G-L-O-W-Z, and then a period, and then N-E-T, net, and that's all of it.
Mr. Borden, thanks so much for your help. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome.
And I hope you can fix this blanket problem of yours. Thanks. Me too. I push the button to end the call and I see the phone wobbling. That's because my hands are shaking. Maybe this is nothing, just a coincidence. But if there's anything at all to find out, I will. Because now I have Sheila Borden's email address. eyelash@glows.net. Her dad probably never even noticed that eyelash is just Sheila, mixed around a little. That's probably the only email he ever got in his life. Dad and Mom are both in the study, sitting in the big armchairs on either side of the tall reading lamp. Dad is dozing, a clipboard with notes and diagrams lying in his lap. Mom looks up from her book and smiles when my clothes walk in. I sit down at the computer and she frowns. It's almost bedtime, Bobby. I just have to use the net a few minutes. She goes back to her book, and when the computer is ready, I open up a search engine. I find the people search features and jump around until I see what I need. It's a reverse hunt engine. You put in an email address, and unless the person you are looking for has been a freak about online privacy, that email address leads you right to the rest of their data. So I scroll to the right box, and I key in eyelash@glows.net. I've got her. Sheila Borden lives in Miami, and I've got her street address and phone number. When I shout, Dad sits up straight, and his clipboard clatters to the floor. Mom stares over her book at me. What? Oh, sorry. Nothing. Just found a cool website, that's all. Because I don't want to jinx this. It's probably nothing. And besides, I don't want to get stuck trying to explain about my field trip to Sears for the rest of the night. Well, it's your bedtime. And you too, David. You've been sitting here snoring, so don't tell me you've got work to do. Up now. Both of you. I grab the printout, say goodnight, and I'm back up to my room 2 steps at a time. I shut my door and grab the phone off my bed, and then I stand still. Part of me says, go back down there and talk to the folks. Tell them what you're thinking here. Ask for some advice. But I don't want to. This is my deal this time, not theirs. Part of me says, call this Sheila right now and see what she has to say. But I don't want to do that either. And part of me says, call Alicia. That's the part of me I agree with. So I punch in her number. Hello? Oh, hi, Mrs. Van Dorn. This is Bobby. I'm really sorry to be calling so late. Could I talk to Alicia? Long pause. Bobby? Did you go somewhere with Alicia this afternoon? My head kicks up into overdrive. In 2 seconds, I think, if she's asking me this, does it mean she already knows? And is this a test to see if I'm a liar? Or is she just suspicious, fishing for info? I say, I did see her at the library, if that's what you mean. Because that's true. And now it's her turn to give me another clue about where this is coming from. I'm a pro at this game. I can hear the worry in her voice. She was out almost 4 hours this afternoon, and she won't talk to me about it. Do you know anything else? Aha, the mom doesn't know. She's fishing. This next part has to be just right, or I'm blacklisted by the mother and hated by the daughter. The first would be an inconvenience, the second would be a tragedy. So I say, "If you don't mind, Mrs. Van Dorn, I don't think it's my place to get between one of my friends and her parents."
Nice.
No, better than nice. Brilliant. And it hits me, 3 weeks ago, I couldn't have even thought that, much less said it to somebody like Alicia's mom. Another pause, plus a mom sigh. Yes, I suppose you're right, Bobby. I'll call Alicia. And while I wait, I'm thinking maybe I should become a family counselor, or maybe a hostage negotiator. Bobby? Hi, Alicia. Just a minute. Then away from the phone, she yells, "Mother, hang up!" And I hear the other phone click off. She always tries to eavesdrop. "So did my mom say anything to you?" She asked me if I went somewhere with you today. "And you said?" "That I did see you at the library." And then she said, "You wouldn't tell her where you were for 4 hours and did I have any information?" And then I said I didn't think I should get between a friend and her parents.
"You said that?"
I did. And she said, "Yes, I suppose you're right. You may applaud now, or throw flowers if you wish."
"I'm impressed. I knew you would be, that's why I told you."
"Okay, smart guy. So what did you do when you got home?" "You mean after I dealt with my mother?"
"Of course."
"I made a jillion phone calls. 58 duds, and then I hit the jackpot. Maybe. Or maybe it's just another dead end. The father of a girl who went to bed one night, and in the morning, she's all gone."
"Like, gone? Gone?"
"Don't know. She hasn't been home in about 3 years, but she sent an email to her folks last Christmas, and I got her email address, and then I looked up her address and phone."
"You called her?"
I wanted to talk to you first."
"Oh."
And then,
"How come?"
"To see what you think I should say to her."
"How should I know?"
"I mean, I can't just call up and say, 'I know you had this defective pink blanket and that you left home very suddenly, so tell me, Sheila, are you invisible?' I can't say something like that or she'll just hang up. And besides, it's pretty late."
Alicia's quiet for about 10 seconds.
"Bobby?"
"What?"
Another pause, and then it's her quiet voice.
"You're very smart. You know exactly how to talk to this woman. I know that. So why did you call me?"
For the second time during this phone call, I've got to get something just right, first try. "Because this afternoon? Because it felt like we rode out there to Sears together, and then we came home alone. And I didn't like it."
Silence.
And I'm thinking I've said too much, or maybe too little, or maybe just the completely wrong thing because I'm an idiot. But she says, "That's my fault. But don't think it's because I don't want to be with you or help you, or that I don't like you, because I do like you. It's because I talked with those people about being blind and working, like really working in a real job at a big company and everything. I mean, some lady at the lighthouse talked to me about all the jobs there are for blind people, but that was like a year ago, and I didn't believe it had anything to do with me. But today, it was different. And it was so new to think about myself that way. And it was scary, and it made me feel alone. It made me feel alone."
"Oh."
She opens up her heart to me, and what do I say? I say, "Oh." And I'm so mad at myself, because I could have said, "But you're not alone, Alicia. I'm here. I'll always be here." And then the lights would dim, and the violins would start playing, and I take her face between my hands. Oh, jeez. I am in big trouble. Right away I say, "But it's good. What happened to you? Maybe you meeting those people was what today was really about. You know what I mean? Because this Sheila woman and all the other 200 and some people on my list, Maybe all that is nothing, like nothing. But what happened for you today, that was real, right? So that's good.
Yeah, it was good. I think that's true.
Then things feel awkward. And for a second, I'm afraid I might have said that stuff I was thinking right out loud. Or else maybe Alicia used her real eyes and she saw what I was feeling, right through the telephone. Her real eyes. I say, so listen, I'll call this lady tomorrow and then let you know what happens, okay?
Okay.
And thanks, Alicia.
For what?
For today, I guess.
For everything.
Everything?
Yeah.
You're welcome.
And thank you too, Bobby.
For what?
Same thing.
Bye.
Good night.
As I get ready for bed and then turn off the lights and pull up the feather quilt, I'm not thinking about my electric blanket and how much I miss it. I'm not thinking about Sheila Borden or about her dad, call number 59. I'm thinking about call number 60, my call to Alicia.
Chapter 23, Long Lost Sister. I half wake up, wrestling with a dream. This guy named Hoffman has kidnapped Alicia and locked her away in a tower, and I'm going nuts looking for a way inside. Then I discover a secret panel that looks like thick pink glass, but it's just a hologram, and I walk right through it. Inside, Alicia is chained to a table, and these electrodes are hooked to her temples, and she's straining at her chains, and beams of sharp green light are shooting out of her eyes and burning holes in the ceiling. Hoffman is wearing a caveman suit made out of old brown pants tied on with neckties, and he's got his hands on the power dials, and behind him there are two jail cells with Mom in one and Dad in the other. I sit up in bed and force myself to wake up. The clock on my dresser says 9:20, and I know it's Wednesday, and I'm in my house in Hyde Park. And I'm glad all that was a dream. Not that reality is a whole lot better. Or less random. And I don't like that image of Mom and Dad behind bars. I have to shake off a feeling of dread, because if you let it, the fear just keeps coming. I do my best thinking in the shower. It's so odd to see the tiny streams of water bounce around, see the shapes of my hands and arms and legs. Warm water runs down my back, and I plan out my talk with Sheila Borden. Because that's the big event for today. Maybe the biggest event in my life, and maybe hers too. I turn off the water and drip dry a little, slide back the curtain and step out of the tub. And there's no towel. I open the door and I'm about to yell and see if Mom is still home, but I hold the yell just in time, because I hear Mom talking down in the entry hall, and I know the voice that answers her. It's Ms. Paget. I creep to the banister at the top of the stairwell. I can't see either of them, but the acoustics are great. The problem is that I've now heard from the Florida authorities, Mrs. Phillips. They have called and visited the home of Mrs. Ethel Layton and have gotten no response, day or night. Seems your Aunt Ethel has vanished, so we'd like you to tell us where she and your son might be. Mom laughs lightheartedly and says, well, that's Aunt Ethel for you. She's a little flighty sometimes. When I talked with her Monday afternoon, she said Bobby was feeling so much better. She said they might do some day trips, maybe even go up to Orlando. But surely, Mrs. Phillips, you must know where your own son is. You don't seem worried at all.
Why should I be worried?
Aunt Ethel is my father's sister, and I have known her all my life, and I've known Bobby all his life. They are two very stable people, and I'm sure they're just fine. And when they get a chance, they'll check in. And I'm so sorry that this is proving difficult for you and your friends in Florida.
Ms. Paget takes her time answering.
Mrs. Phillips, This isn't difficult. Difficult is when a child is declared to be formally missing under suspicious circumstances. Because at that point, the full resources of the state of Illinois jump into action, and possibly the FBI as well. When that happens, these things often get into the newspapers. It can affect lives and careers. It can get quite messy and difficult.
That sounds a lot like a threat, Miss Badger.
My name is Ms. Paget, and it's not a threat. It's a promise.
Mom pauses.
Do they teach the people in your agency anything about the United States Constitution? One of the best ideas in the Constitution is that little part about how a citizen shall be presumed innocent until proven guilty. Proven. Tell me, did you happen to bring along another search warrant this morning?
No.
Fine. Then you have a nice day, Miss Paget. And the front door slams shut. It can't be a good idea treating the woman like that. I'm not sure I like having Mom act like some tough guy from a Clint Eastwood movie, but as with almost everything else these days, it's out of my hands. So I get on with the business of finding a towel. As I grab a quick breakfast, Mom is cleaning up in the kitchen. She doesn't say anything about Miss Paget, and I don't ask. But I can tell she's on edge. And I'm glad she has a 10 o'clock class. It'll get her mind off the long arm of the law, and it'll also get her out of my way. 10 minutes later, Mom's gone, and I'm at the desk in my room. I have some notes on a pad of paper. I know what I'll say if I get an answering machine, what I'll say if Sheila picks up herself, what I'll say if it's a kid or a boyfriend or someone, and I think I know how I can get her to tell me if she knows anything useful. And as I punch in her phone number, I'm being careful. For myself, I mean. I'm being careful not to get my hopes up. I'm just going to ask this lady a few questions. If her answers help, fine. If they don't, then I go back to the big list and call another 100, another 200 people, whatever it takes to see whatever there is to see, which might just be nothing, or everything. Yes? And then a throaty cough. A woman's voice, sleepy. The voice of someone who smokes cigarettes. Sheila Borden? Yes, that's right. Awake now, on guard. I'm calling because I think you might be able to... Are you one of those kids from Students Against Drunk Driving? Because I already said no to you people 2 days ago. No, it's nothing like that. I'm calling because of something else. I'm calling because I talked with your father last night, and...
You talked with my father?
About me?
Now there's an edge in her voice.
Fear. Maybe a little anger. No, not really about you, not specifically. And this is the scary part of my plan. Because I've decided to just tell the truth. Because it takes truth to find truth, right? That's what my dad says. And what's the risk? She has no idea who I am. I'm just this voice on the phone. So I say, I called your dad because I woke up one morning about 3.5 weeks ago and I was gone. Just like you.
Tick, tick, tick.
Then she says, what are you talking about? You got up one morning and you ran away from home? And I notice she's not hanging up on me. She's talking, thinking. I say, I didn't run away from home. From school, yes, but only kind of. I pause because I want her to have time to think. I was just gone. She's angry now. Is this some kind of a prank? I don't believe you talked to my father. Anybody could call anybody and say that. What's his address and phone number?
I'm ready for that one. I read off the information.
Okay, so you talked to my dad. So what? What's this got to do with me? How come you're calling? So I use my big question. When I say that I woke up one morning and I was gone, what do you think I mean by that? Just the slightest hesitation. Then she says,
how should I know what you mean?
Just take a guess. That's all I'm asking. First guess.
Like I said,
that you ran away from home.
Nope.
Guess again.
You didn't know who you were? Amnesia or something?
That's closer.
Guess again.
Hey, you know what?
Goodbye, that's what.
And she slams her phone down so hard that I hear it bounce off onto the floor, hear her swearing and grabbing for it, and then a second slam, and the line goes dead. And I'm afraid I've lost her. Really afraid. I punch redial. 2, 3, 5 rings, and the answering machine picks up. It's her voice on the message, all bright and cheery and efficient. This is Sheila at Eyelash Technical. Leave a message or send an email from our website, eyelash.com. That's EILASH.com. Bye. Then there's the beep, and I'm rushing. I'm rushing to say everything, and I'm talking way too fast, and I'm probably saying too much, but I don't care. Sheila, I didn't mean to get you mad or anything. I'm just trying to find something out, because I really did wake up that morning, and I really was gone. Like I couldn't see myself. That's what I mean. And I'm trying to figure it out. I have to figure it out. I have to. And I just thought that if... She picks up the phone and I hear her answering machine click off. There's a deep tiredness in her voice. A weariness. You can't just call someone up and say, I turned invisible one day, can you? And I know. I don't believe it yet, but I know. I gulp and I feel tears at the corners of my eyes. Because it's like I'm finding a lost sister or something. Like a reunion with an army buddy, an old Greek warrior. So it really did happen to you too? Almost a whisper.
Really?
Then, how did you find me?
So I tell her, and she's blown away.
A blanket? That's so wild. A blanket? From Sears. She pauses, then,
oh man, we could be talking about a big lawsuit here.
Sears, for God's sake. Big money. Do you realize that? Millions. She wants to talk. I can tell that, but I look at my notes and I have to keep to my own program. So can you remember the date that it happened to you? She laughs, and there's bitterness in it.
What do you think?
Of course I can. January 12th, 3 years ago. Hard to forget a day that totally scrambles your life, don't you think? And then she needs to talk, and I listen to her whole story. How she panicked that morning, how she started to tell her parents but then stopped. She actually lived at home 3 days after it happened. She saw her parents crying about her. She lived in her own room, learned to sneak around, learned how to carry small stuff between her arms and her ribcage. She stole her dad's savings account information, went to the public library, used the internet, and transferred $4,000 into the account she had used at college. Then she set up an account for herself at a bank in Miami and transferred the money there. She stole it because she didn't know what else to do, which tells me a lot about her and about me. Because the first thing I did when it happened was tell my parents. She didn't feel like she could do that. I ask, why Florida?
Why do you think?
Ever try walking around naked in Denver in the wintertime? And I see why she went south. She took a plane, just rode the bus to Denver International, found a flight that wasn't too full, and walked on. Sat up in first class and stole food from people who were sleeping. At a public access terminal in a Miami library, she found a cheap apartment and paid the deposit electronically. Didn't you have to sign papers or something? Like in person? Ever see a Muslim woman completely covered in a black veil? That's what I did. No one even blinked. I wear it when I go grocery shopping, too. There's a pretty good-sized Islamic community around here. The only bad part is when I'm at the supermarket and another veiled woman comes over and starts yakking at me in Farsi or Urdu or something, and all I can do is nod and say, Salam. But other than that, it works great. For the past 3 years, she's been earning good money designing websites. She bought a fast computer that was delivered to her door, bought some good software, and learned how to use it. I had plenty of time. Know what I mean? In the internet, it's made for people like me, like us. You don't ever have to go outside if you don't want to. I find design jobs on the net. I work at home. I upload my projects over the net, and I get paid by direct money transfer into my accounts. Works great. What about, like, friends? She laughs. But there's a hollow sound to it. You mean, like, a boyfriend? Not a chance. I didn't like men that much back when they could see me. And they didn't like me so much either. I used to miss hanging out with my girlfriends from back home, but I'm over it. I had a parrot for a while, but it died. So this is simpler. I do my own thing, and that's all there is to it. What about doctors and dentists? Stuff like that. The only thing I worry about is if I get really sick. I had the flu last winter for about 2 weeks, and I almost thought I'd have to go to the hospital. But I just took a bunch of aspirin and toughed it out. How about if things got serious? I've thought about that. First, I'd find a very rich woman doctor, the richer the better, and I'd walk into her offices wearing my black outfit. When we were alone, I'd remind her that she's required to keep my condition a secret, and I'd make her sign a promise of complete medical confidentiality. Then I'd take off my veils, and if she ever broke her promise, I'd sue her right down to her pantyhose. This lady's definitely a Greek warrior. Only she's probably tougher than the guys were. So no other friends? 2. Both women. People I can trust. But that's enough. Never had all that many friends anyway. How about you? Kind of the same. At first it was just my parents. Then I started talking to this blind girl. Interesting. I thought about that too. So, does she know? Yeah, but she's been great about everything. And her parents too. So, how long has it been for you? Less than a month? Uh-huh. But I think there might be a way to reverse it. At least that's what I'm working on. And now I found you. If we figure it out, you'll be the first to know. So, you really think there's a way back? I hope so. Well, let me know, okay? Absolutely, I will. What's your name? Bobby. Bobby Phillips. It's nice to talk to you, Bobby. Yeah, it's good to talk to you too. I don't know what else to say, and I'm about to sign off. Then she says, Bobby, you have to promise me something, okay? Sure, I guess so. What? I don't want you to tell anybody about me. Nobody. It's kind of too late. I already told Alicia I was going to call you. She's the blind girl. But she doesn't know anything else about me, right? Yeah? So keep it that way. Don't tell her. Tell her you couldn't reach me or something. Tell her I'm dead. Tell her whatever you want to. I don't want to lie to her. She'll keep everything a secret if I ask her to. Easy for you to say. What if she decides she needs money 2 years from now and she rats me out to some sleazy supermarket tabloid? Then what? Then I'm screwed, that's what. Alicia's not like that. Remember, she knows about me too. I trust her. But maybe that's because you're young and don't know any better. Or maybe you're stupid or something. I'm about to start shouting when she says, Sorry. I don't mean to sound nasty about this, but I've had to move twice in the last 3 years because I thought I could trust some people. Things like that happen, and it makes you pretty paranoid. Well, look, If you've got to tell this girl, then I can't stop you. But don't tell anybody else, and make her promise to keep it a secret, okay? It's important. Do you understand?
Yes.
And you promise?
I promise.
And I know Alicia will too.
Good.
So, good luck. I hope everything works out the way you want it to.
Thanks.
Me too. And I'll get back in touch if there's any news. After we say goodbye, I flop onto my bed and look at the ceiling. I need to take stock of what I know. 3 years. She's been gone for 3 years. So this is not a temporary condition. That's one thing I know. This condition did have a specific cause, and the blanket is part of it. I'm sure of that now. But the blanket's not all of it. If it was just the blanket causing this, then more people would have been affected. Then again, maybe more were, and I just haven't called them yet. And I know that it happened to Sheila on January 12th, 3 years ago in Denver, Colorado. And it happened to me February 23rd, both in the winter. Duh. Big coincidence. Winter is when you use an electric blanket. But still, I've got two locations, two blankets, and two dates, plus two invisible people. And lying there on my bed, tracing the maze of cracks in the plaster on my ceiling, I face a fact. What I've actually got is only slightly more than nothing. Chapter 24. First Class Work. Any physics nut will tell you that there's never nothing. I've been hearing this from Dad all my life. Now I get it. For example, split the atom and you get neutrons and electrons and protons. Keep splitting and you get neutrinos and quarks and muons and antiquarks and mesons. On and on and on, smaller and smaller and smaller. Less and less mass, more and more energy. It all gets down to the little things. Like two blankets, two cities, two dates, and two people. After I talk to Sheila, I don't see how the facts can add up to anything. But it's never just about the facts. Sherlock Holmes proves that, case after case. It's all about what you do with the facts, how you look at them. When I do an instant message to Alicia on Wednesday afternoon, she starts right in asking me a million questions about Sheila. How did she react? What did she sound like? Was she happy? Does she have a boyfriend? Is she excited about finding someone else like her? On and on. Instant messaging with Alicia takes forever. It's not the connection, because she's got one of those lines that's always connected. It's because the text-to-speech function on her end has to say everything out loud before she can type back an answer. I finally have to shut her off, because I need to just think about what to do. But Alicia doesn't want me to think about it. She wants me to call my dad and tell him the news, and then have my dad call her dad so they can talk about it. Bobby 7272. No can do. I promised Sheila I wouldn't tell anyone about her. Except you. I told her I had to tell you. Alicia 1.
Had to? Why?
Isn't that obvious?
Maybe. Tell me anyway.
I told her I wouldn't lie to you.
So touching. Still, you have to tell your dad and my dad. They can help.
I'll think about it.
Don't think. Do. Time's up. It's time to do.
Don't be bossy.
Do, do, do.
Gotta go.
Coward.
Am not.
R2.
Am not. I don't want to break a promise.
So just give the dads the info. Don't give the source. But they have to have the info, and maybe more. You might have to call your girlfriend back and talk real nice to her. All kissy-kissy.
Ha ha, so funny.
So call your dad, okay? Okay? Bobby, you answer me.
Okay, 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 bossy.
Flattery will get you nowhere.
I'm already nowhere.
So true.
Bye.
Let me know. Promise?
Promise. Bye, bossy. I start to dial Dad's number three times, and three times I stop. I found this woman, not him. It's my discovery, not his. But after I wrestle with it for about 5 minutes, I know I'd be stupid not to tell him. And I'll still be the one who found her. That's not going to change. When I reach Dad at his office and tell him, he almost goes nuts.
What?
You're kidding. This is fantastic, Bobby. Hold on, I've got to shut my office door. Then comes the hard part, because he wants to know everything, but I'm not telling. Dad, I promised to protect this other person. So all I know right now is that it happened in Denver, Colorado, on the night of January 12th, 3 years ago, and the same kind of blanket was being used.
And this person is about how old?
Does that matter?
Could, Bobby.
Everything could matter.
Like what kind of house it happened in? Any other appliances in the room? The exact location of the house? Everything could be very important.
Well, all I can tell you right now is the date and the year and the place. If we need more, I could maybe call her back and...
Aha! So it's a woman.
See, that could be important, because men and women have different chemical makeups, different muscle densities. We need more data, Bobby. The more, the better. Dad's giving me the third degree, major interrogation, and it really ticks me off. For the past few years, I've just been gritting my teeth and kicking my door and swearing under my breath at him about stuff like this. I know he's excited, and I know that the guy lives for data. But here I am, and I'm telling him I've made a promise. And he acts like that doesn't matter. I'm about to shout something and slam down the phone. But instead, I get this calm feeling, and I say real quiet like, Dad, this lady wants to stay out of all this. And I promised her I'd respect that. So I'm not telling anyone, not even you. When I make a promise, it has to be real. I guess I must have sounded like the president or something. And it's so quiet for a second that I think maybe he fell off his chair. Then he says, Of course,